This is Christopher O'Reilly, and welcome to this week's podcast of From the Top. Enjoy.
From NPR.
It's From the Top.
Celebrating the power of music.
In the hands of America's kids.
Here's our host, one of America's finest concert pianists, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you and welcome. It's great to be back in front of our hometown audience at Jordan Hall in Boston. And get ready to think, people, because the kids you're about to meet on today's program are quite a thoughtful bunch. We've got a 15-year-old who's thought up a design for an artificial heart, an 11-year-old pianist who's so thoughtful in his playing, it's like an old sage at the keyboard, and this young man standing here who thinks deeply about Bach. Tell them how strongly you feel about Bach's music, Slatty, and don't mince words.
I feel that Bach's music approaches immortality. It's so timeless. The technical mastery of Bach's composition is phenomenal and astounding, but also the fact that his music appeals to the human spirit. And I think if Bach's music is forgotten, the human race will go with it. It will have gotten that bad.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Westboro, Massachusetts, please welcome 14-year-old cellist Slatimir Fung. Slatty, that was a perfect and eloquent introduction to the piece you're going to play. What is it going to be?
I will be playing the Bourrées from Bach's Suite for Solo Cello No. 4 in E-flat major.
Okay, when you're ready, please take it from the top.
Thank you.
Vladimir Fung, 14 years old, our cellist from Westborough, Massachusetts, playing Bourrée's 1 and 2 from Bach's 4th Suite for unaccompanied cello in E-flat major. Well, Zlatty, you seem born to that music as well as to the cello. Was the cello always your first love?
Actually, it wasn't. My parents were the ones who chose the cello as an instrument for me. And for the majority of my younger years, I thought that practicing the cello was just a chore, something that I had to check off my to-do list, just like, you know, washing the dishes or sweeping the floor. But as my life progressed, I started to see the real value in music and the power that music brings. And the particularly formative experience was in the summer of 2011 when I went to the Indiana Summer String Academy in Bloomington, and I was surrounded by all these wonderful musicians, and I thought, you know, this is what I want to do for my life.
That's great. Okay, now that you know you want to be a musician, you've got to deal with your penchant for procrastination. I understand this is true.
Yeah, I procrastinate a lot. I've beaten my parents in that race. But I always tend to do things in the last minute. It's sort of just the way that I unfortunately do things. And it extends to my musical life as well. A lot of times I'll have a concert in the future, and I will have to learn a new piece for that concert. And I won't learn that piece until it's, relatively speaking, too late. And I won't be able to do as good of a job as I would have been able to had I started the piece earlier. And I even sometimes have nightmares, Freudian nightmares, where I am performing a concerto, and I just don't know the piece. I'm going along, and I'm thinking, wait, I don't know this concerto. What am I supposed to do?
I've had that one, along with the... And a train going into a tunnel. I don't know where that comes from either. So what are you doing instead of practicing? Is it Facebook? Is it video games? What is it?
Mainly it's chess. I play a lot. I play a lot of chess. I study the opening, and I play online a lot. I read a lot of books. Unfortunately, some days I play more chess than I practice the cello. I used to play, actually, a lot of video games, but then at a certain point I realized, playing video games, you play the game and then you beat it and it's done and you haven't really gotten that much out of it, you know?
No.
Not the same way that I feel after I, you know, play a really satisfying chess game.
With chess? So, I mean, my God, that doesn't sound like slacker activity to me. And speaking of books, John Elliott Gardner's new book on Bach, I think you'll find extraordinarily inspiring. Zlatty, you're going to be coming back at the end of the show to join me in a Spanish dance by David Popper. We're going to look forward to that, and thank you for the opener.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
This is Vladimir Fung, 14-year-old cellist from Westborough, Massachusetts.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. Over the last 8 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded nearly $2 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Our second performer is one of those Jack Kent Cook young artists Joanne just mentioned. He comes to Boston from Bloomington, Indiana. He's 18, he plays the violin, and his name is Gregorio Lopez. Greg, while I head back to the piano, tell everyone what we're playing together.
Sure. We're going to be playing Tchaikovsky's Melody.
Thank you.
Gregorio Lopez, 18-year-old violinist from Bloomington, Indiana, playing Tchaikovsky. It was just beautiful, Greg. Really enjoyed playing that with you. Gorgeous sound. You know, earlier Zlati was talking about his life-changing experience at the Summer String Academy at Indiana University, but you yourself grew up in Bloomington around the Jacobs School of Music at the university, and you've gotten a lot of inspiration and support from the classical community there in Bloomington. We asked you to tell us more.
Growing up in Bloomington, Indiana, everybody's heard about Josh Bell, the violinist. He's pretty much a superstar there. He grew up there. He's from there. That's not me playing. That's Josh Bell. I first met him, actually, in his father's office. I was with my mom. She was having a therapy session, actually, with his father. His father is a psychologist. And just one day, Josh Bell just walks in. And from that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, I just want to be that person. In Bloomington, there's Indiana University, and it's just this cultural mecca and surrounded by farmland. And it's just great. They have a pre-college program that I'm a part of, and I'm actually a part of the top group there, the Violin Virtuosi. So that's what you're hearing right now. So before I really got into loving music as much as I do today, I was really motivated because I heard that the Violin Virtuosi gets to go on these wonderful tours all around the world. But last year, we actually went to Argentina and Brazil, which was really fun, especially because I'm Brazilian myself. So I was sort of like visiting a place I already knew, like sort of as a home, but I was also visiting as a foreigner. So it was really interesting. We played for both the richest people and the poorest people. The rich people, they owned entire floors of these huge buildings, had extremely expensive tapestries all over and artworks all over their apartments. It was crazy. And then we also played for the poorest people, which for me was the most interesting, because we were able to play for these kids, these storm-tossed kids, in the middle of the shanty towns, the poorest parts of the city. And when we started playing for them, their faces actually lit up. And that was just magical. And then they also played some samba for us, which was really fun. The person who puts these amazing tours together and who's the head of the String Academy is my private teacher, Mimi Zweig. I'm really lucky to have her as my teacher.
So if you lengthen your back by bending your knees so the neck is coming out of the backbone, then it allows you to be free here. Can you just... That's right.
Mimi is truly amazing. She is full of energy, more energy than I can understand how she can actually muster it. She's constantly moving. She's really strict when she needs to be, of course. But she's also really caring and nice, and she takes care of you because she knows that also you're not just a violin player. You actually have a life outside of music as well. You have a family. She actually helped me when my parents had their very messy divorce. But at the same time, she's not necessarily very overbearing. She's not a helicopter teacher.
Being involved in the lives of my students is unavoidable, and for so many good reasons, it's wonderful. But I'm not one of those obsessive violin teachers who goes to all the competitions with the kids. My ambitions for my students are to make them independent. If they're independent as people, they'll be independent as musicians, and they'll have the tools and the capabilities with which to go forward and go through this world, which we know is not easy.
My favorite part of playing music so far has come to be its healing quality, both for myself and going through, of course, the divorce and other difficult parts of life. but it has also inspired me in how it helps and heals other people around me. The kids in the shanty town in Brazil, the kids we actually played for some in the Bronx, the elderly, I actually played in for some elderly in an Area 10 agency. And it's just amazing just to see the power of music.
Well, Greg, lots of support and encouragement and triumph through adversity and a lot of life-altering exchanges in that story. You've really got quite an epic saga in your young life. This is wonderful. And I understand you've now been accepted at Stanford University, and you'll be going there in the fall. What do you think you'll study there?
Engineering, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, that was actually a decision I made last summer. Mm-hmm. Up till then, it was, I want to do music.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's still very difficult for me to choose not to do music, but just I found I also wanted to do so much else with my life, not just music. I also love engineering, math, psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I'm not going to let go of my music, but I just didn't feel like I could only do that and devote myself to it.
We were just at Stanford University a few weeks ago playing with a whole orchestra of non-music majors, and so they're similarly talented in lots of different fields, and I'm sure they'll be welcoming you with open arms. And thanks so much, Greg. Really a pleasure playing with you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Gregorio Lopez, 18 years old, a violinist from Bloomington, Indiana. And now, Quartet Noche, four outstanding musicians living and studying at the Walnut Hill School in nearby Natick, Massachusetts. They are violinists Joy Kuo, 18 years old, from Taiwan, Rose Morschel, 17, from Milton, Massachusetts. Our violist is Sloane Weslow, also 17. She comes from Stillwater, Minnesota. And Drake Driscoll is our 18-year-old cellist from Holly Springs, North Carolina. We have Drake at the mic. Drake, introduce this piece and talk about what inspired the composer.
We will be playing the first movement of Janáček String Quartet No. 1, Kreutzer Sonata, which was inspired by the novella, The Kreutzer Sonata, by Leo Tolstoy. And that was, in fact, also inspired by Beethoven's Kreutzer Sonata for violin. Thank you.
Quartet Noce, performing the opening movement of Leos Janacek's first string quartet, the Kreutzer Sonata. Joy Kuo, 18, and Rose Marshall, 17, are violinists. A violist was 17-year-old Sloane Reslow, and Drake Driscoll, 18-year-old cellist. They're coached by Laura Thielke at the Walnut Hill School in Natick, Massachusetts. Cleverly enough, Noce means walnut in Italian. I just love the rhetoric of Janacek's music and the sense of, gosh, you guys are constantly back and forth between intensely personal and intensely supportive and communal. And Rose, I'm sure I've never seen anybody replace a mute on the bridge as quickly as you did. I thought there was a scorpion on your fingerboard or something. It was like, wow. But seriously, the foreground and background and the give and take and the intense confessional aspect of the piece is really something that comes across when you ladies play it. You play so beautifully, and I can tell just by watching you that making music in this quartet is hugely enjoyable to you all. But all of you have a relationship with music that goes beyond that. In fact, music has helped you overcome some pretty difficult things. Sloane, tell.
I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 12. And at that point, I had been playing classical music for 7 years. And when I was diagnosed, it was a really heavy diagnosis. And I wasn't sure how to balance music and keeping myself alive. So I really actually wanted to quit music. And I stopped playing viola for about a year. But when I came back to it, it really offered an escape. I wear an insulin pump to help manage my type 1 diabetes, and so I actually have a needle in me 24/7. And when I play viola, it's the only time when I don't feel the needle, so it's really special.
And that's great. So we're glad you came back. Rose, how has music been a comfort to you?
It's been really helpful these past 2.5 years that I've had anorexia, because I think this time is the time I've most been interested in music. These past 2.5 years, I've really been working, and I really know that's what I want to do, because it really, I'm able to express my pain through my music, and it's like it's a healthy way to express your pain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Drake, you dealt with something pretty tough when you were quite young.
Yeah, my father passed away when I was 2.5 years old. We were on an airplane going to New Zealand. My parents took a year sabbatical, and he had a heart attack on the airplane. Mm. And soon after that, I had so much anxiety, and I was worried about my mom, and it turned into OCD. I was diagnosed when I was 9 years old. And I began playing cello at age 6. And I never really get away from it all unless I'm in the practice room, where that's where all my what-if thoughts sort of leave me. Yeah. Or if I'm performing and I feel like I can put what I'm feeling into the music, and that's the only time I can really like share my story with people.
So. I'm very sure it was a catastrophic occurrence to lose your dad that way, and I don't see how checking on your mom 10 times a night as a result of that would be called OCD. I would appreciate the attention. My cats check on me about 10 times a night, too. But you ladies are an incredible support group to each other, and my gosh, your dedication to music comes across in the performance. Thank you for playing for us.
Thank you.
Thank you. The teenage members of the Noce Quartet, Joy Kuo, Rose Marshall, Sloane Reslow, and Drake Driscoll.
If you like From the Top, make sure you like us on Facebook. It's the easiest way to stay in touch with everything From the Top. You'll find daily videos, articles, photos, and a thriving community of fans. Join the fun by going to facebook.com/fromthetopfans.
Support for From the Top comes from this and other radio stations. And from U.S. Trust, who believes that the arts play a vital role in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians, as well as NPR listeners. From New England Conservatory of Music, where young artists and teachers are committed to transforming classical music. Online at necmusic.edu. And from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, whose mission is to advance the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. This is NPR.
Thank you.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're coming to you from our home, New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. Coming up, an 11-year-old pianist from New York talks about his young life growing up in his parents' music conservatory.
Hold on a second. Let me turn this thing on. Hi, my name is Deanna Sorelli. I'm 15 years old. I play the harp, and this is my metronome. When I was younger, I used to hate playing with the metronome. Whenever I had to practice with it, I'd turn it on for a little bit, fail to actually work on my piece effectively, turn it off, shove it in the back of a drawer. I told you I hated it. So down at the Brevard Music Center this past summer, I started to keep a practice journal, writing down everything that I did and my thoughts about it. And quickly I realized, oh, I can't just write down. I played it lots of times slowly. So I found myself starting to use the metronome to actually write down how fast and how slow I was doing it with a specific tempo marking. So sooner or later, I found myself using my metronome every day. So for example, I'm about to play Fourier's Impromptu for the harp, and when I'm practicing the beginning, in order to work on the quality of the chords, I'll set my metronome to about a quarter note equals 60, like this. But Fourier's marking on the score for the beginning is a quarter note equals 76, like this. However, I find when I'm performing the piece, I like to play the beginning a little bit faster than Fourier's tempo marking. So without further ado, I hope you all enjoy Fourier's Impromptu for harp.
Thank you.
Deanna Cirilli, 15-year-old harpist from Winchester, Massachusetts, playing Gabriel Fauré's Impromptu for harp. Deanna, hearing you play that so beautifully, as you just did, reminds me of Gabriel Fauré's very intensely personal harmonic language that, as a harpist, having to really be comprehensively aware and understanding of the whole harmonic context due to you were having to repedal for every harmonic change. It's just an inner knowledge of this piece that I don't think too many of us would have in our lifetimes. It's really beautifully done.
Well, thank you.
What are you doing? I understand you've got an old pacemaker on your desk.
Yes. Yes, that's true. In eighth grade, I'm a sophomore now, so 3 years ago, as kind of the last project in my middle school, it's kind of your last hurrah of projects. It's called the Capstone Project. In the fall, all of the eighth graders write a research paper on a topic of their choice. In the fall, in the winter, they make a project on it, and in the spring, they present it. And so for mine, I chose to research the topic bionics. And when I was researching bionics, I discovered that one of my grandparents' very close friends was actually one of the first people to receive an LVAD, which is a device that helps keep your heart.
Is it the lower ventricle, the left ventricle?
Left ventricle.
Left ventricle assistance.
Yeah, there's like a right atrium, a left atrium, a left ventricle, and a right ventricle in a heart. And it kind of it assists your heart through your left ventricle. And he was the first person to receive one of those. And he had the LVAD for about 18 months until he had a heart transplant. And after you have a heart transplant, you need a pacemaker to keep your heart in place and beating properly until it kind of gets used to your body. So after he took that, they had his pacemaker taken out. They gave it to me when I started my research on the Capstone Project. And I still have it today, actually.
It's kind of gross, really.
It doesn't have any blood on it.
It doesn't. Okay, well, I'm very happy to hear that. Very happy to hear that. Okay, but it didn't stop there. Now you have an artificial heart sitting around. How did
that
happen?
Yeah, I have one in my basement. for the project in the wintertime of the Capstone Project, after I had researched a bunch of heart assist devices, including the LVAD and the pacemaker, I decided, you know what? I'm going to be really ambitious, and I'm going to design an artificial heart, because I haven't seen one of those out there. It turns out that there was actually like a group of doctors legitimately doing this, and they were, and actually artificial hearts came out that winter. And so I went through a bunch of CAD programs, which are computer animated design programs, to design this heart. And on the last program that I was working with, I was working alongside a guy who works at a 3D at 3D Systems, which is a 3D printing company. And he had it printed for me. I was very generous, very nice of him. And he actually broke the first one, so he printed out a second one for me. So I don't have one. I have two artificial hearts in my basement.
So you can spare one for yourself and one for the Tin Man, right?
Yes,
of course.
Pretty much.
Gosh, I'm way back at you're working with the computer animated designs, and now the 3D printing is just flipping me out. Thank you for your multidimensional personality and your wonderful performance of the foray. Best of luck to you,
Deanna. Thank you.
Deanna Cirilli, 15 years old, our harpist from Winchester, Massachusetts. Next up is the youngest performer on today's show. He's an 11-year-old pianist from Great Neck, New York. Please welcome Maxime Lando.
I'm going to play The Lark by Glinka, transcribed by Balakirev.
Thank you.
Maxime Lando, 11 years old, our pianist from Great Neck, New York, playing The Lark by Mikhail Glinka, arranged by Mili Balakira. Gorgeous playing, Maxime.
Thank you.
You were just born to play that piece, and I understand that music has been part of your life from day one.
Yes. I was basically born in my parents' music center, and I mean, from day one, I was surrounded by music everywhere. It was my life.
A conservatory in Great Neck.
Yeah, yes. My parents run the conservatory, yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, my parents basically, yeah, I mean, my mom started teaching me a little bit later, and music was my life.
She couldn't get you out of the lessons. I mean, you would sit in on her other lessons.
Yeah, I would sit in on her lessons, and I would sit in the entire day until she would have enough of me, throw me out, and say I was annoying. Which happened a lot, by the way.
Hardly annoying, Maxime. Now, at the ripe old age of 11, you're already playing chamber music at a professional level in New York City. Who are you playing with?
I'm playing with the Jupiter Chamber Players.
Okay, yeah, well, I remember that. We're back from Jens Nygaard's day. They play a lot of sort of unknown music.
Yeah, so, a lot of lesser-known unknown, yeah.
What's the first thing you played with the group?
The first thing I played a Mozart, clarinet, and piano duo, but it was really originally for violin and piano, but my dad transposed it onto the clarinet.
Yeah. Mozart liked the clarinet a lot.
Yeah.
I think that must have sounded great.
It was
great.
A lot of fun.
And you've been playing with them every year since then, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the director, Mei Ying, invited me since then every single year, and it's been wonderful.
Yeah. You've been a very busy lad with the concerts, and tell the story about breaking your finger before one of the concerts.
Yeah, before one of the Jupiter concerts, my friends convinced me to play basketball, which I absolutely hate. I hate basketball more than anything. So I was playing basketball, and my finger came under the basketball, and it broke.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I went to the doctor. The doctor said, you can play if you can stand the pain. I did not like this advice, but yes. I took the advice, and I played the concert the next day, and it went great.
Yeah.
Concert went great.
I imagine... So a broken pinky, they probably have it set in a sort of a cast or
a splint
or something.
Yeah, it was very uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable, but I bet it helped the stability of the octaves. I think I'd like to try that.
Yeah, there's a lot of octaves in a piece, so it was especially difficult, but yeah.
Playing through the pain, Maxime, and now playing through the love, that lark was just saturated with such good feeling and wisdom, and gosh, can't wait to hear you again.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Maxime. Maxime Lando, 11 years old, our pianist from Great Neck, New York.
Maxime is really fun to watch. We have video of him and all of our young performers on our website. Go to fromthetop.org. Chris.
I promised another performance by the 14-year-old cellist Zlatimir Fung, who played Bach so beautifully earlier. Zlatimir, would you introduce the piece we're going to play together?
We will be playing Vito by David Popper.
We've not had this on the program before. A Vito is actually a lively Andalusian dance and a great way to end our show today. I want to thank all of our stellar young performers and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, Zlati, we're going to take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley and Tim Banker, with music director Tom Vinieri. The tour producer is David Balsam, and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with Lauren Queso and Dan Hallis. Broadcast mix by John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. If you'd like to appear in our program, apply online at fromthetop.org. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Newman's Own Foundation, working to nourish the common good by donating all profits from Newman's Own food products to charitable organizations that seek to make the world a better place. More information is available at newmansownfoundation.org. From the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people from diverse backgrounds and ensure that they reach their fullest potential. More information is available at wtgrantfoundation.org.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org.
And now for a little bonus content, my break piece from the show. Enjoy.